Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The music industry is constantly evolving, and in the past few years, digital downloads and streaming services have dominated, so much so that recently Best Buy and Target both announced that they will no longer be selling CDs. This hour, we'll talk about the possible end of compact discs and how things are changing. We're going to start the hour with someone who has been through all of this before, someone who has been an audiophile since the days of 45s, and even remembers listening to big band music on 78s, our very own Dennis Reese. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Charity. I'm never going to Target or Best Buy again.
Okay.
Very upset about this.
Bold statement. So take us back to those 45s. Do you remember the first record you ever bought?
Oh, the first record would have probably been a Buddy Holly record. That would have been It Doesn't Matter Anymore. I played that over and over again. But my dad took me to the Jenny Company in downtown Waterloo every Saturday afternoon, gave me a dollar to go in and buy a 45. It was a nice man.
Yeah, you bought one record a week then.
I did. But there were two sides on the record. You know, I got two songs. It was fun.
How big was your 45 collection?
Oh, you know, not that big, but it was several hundred. But, you know, I was an only kid. I was spoiled.
So how did you listen? Set the scene. Dennis Reese with his record player and his collection of 45s. How did you listen to your music?
It was an old tube record player. You could smell the tubes. It's actually the dust on the tubes that starts to burn. It has that old tube smell and a very heavy tone arm and just one speaker in front. But, you know, you could crank it up. It was great. It was great. It was more fun. I actually had more fun with 78s because there were a ton of 78s left in the basement of my house in Cedar Falls where I grew up, by unknown relatives from the 20s and 30s. They were just in boxes. And an old Victrola down there and an electronic player that you could play the 78s. And, boy, that was fun, too.
So now one of the things, vinyl's making a comeback, but let's think about those 78s. I mean, those discs were big and heavy. What was it like to listen to them?
It was a physical experience. I mean, 78s are made out of shellac, which is actually a resin made from the lac bug, an insect that
learn something new every day.
Which is found in Thailand.
Okay.
Spelled L-A-C, in case you're wondering. So they're fragile. They're heavy. And if you drop one, it breaks into about 1,000 pieces.
Just shatters.
But you just the fun thing is watching it go so fast. I mean, 78 is a very fast speed. And you just sort of get entranced by watching the record.
And the 78, for people who don't play around with record players, that's 78 revolutions per minute.
That's right.
So that is really fast.
It's
for a big record, too.
It's moving right along. And each side was maybe 3 minutes maximum. There really wasn't a lot of music you get on a 78. But it was sure fun to play them.
And what kind of stuff did you listen to on those records?
Oh, Les Paul and Mary Ford. I had an obsession with How High the Moon, which actually came out in 1951, the year I was born. But I didn't start listening to it for a few years. Probably one of the best records of all time, actually. It's just still sounds great today. It's very modern sounding.
Who's your favorite recording by with How High the Moon?
Oh, Les Paul and Mary Ford. Yeah, Les Paul and Mary Ford. They were husband and wife, and I dearly loved them. And she was a fabulous singer, and Les Paul was an amazing sound producer and guitarist.
And inventor.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because he invented the electric guitar, didn't he?
Yes.
Okay.
And so how often did I play that record? Well, you could wear these 78s out where they changed from sort of black to white because they were just ground in by the needle.
Oh, wow.
And finally, you just throw it away, you know.
So, all right, you had 78s, you had your 45s. 8-track tapes came next, right? Yeah. Do you remember when they first were introduced?
They were just horrible.
Horrible? Why? I mean, they were super portable. You could play them in the car.
I never saw a car with an 8-track player.
Oh, I did.
You did?
Yeah.
I never saw one. No, they were bulky. They didn't work very well. The tracks would, you know, jump around. But my dad won as a Christmas gift. He never even used it. It just sat on the table in the dining room. There was an awful format, really. And if you can find 8-tracks at a garage sale, you can use them to, you know, like hockey pucks or something. Yeah.
Yeah. 8-tracks were at every garage sale when I was a kid. All right. Cassettes were next. No.
Well, cassettes were wonderful at first until we realized that they just sort of sucked, you know.
Well, they wore out.
Oh, yeah. They wore out. Sound quality was terrible until Dolby came along. They warped. The tape would warp. It would get stuck in the machine. It was a nasty format. Kind of cool at first, but then we're glad it's gone.
But it was, I mean, that was very portable. It gave you the opportunity to have a whole lot of music in a very compact
form. It did.
Form.
Yes, it
did. So you could take your collection of cassettes around.
Yeah, just try to find a song, though, on a cassette.
Oh, I remember
that. It's impossible.
Yeah. And then the more you try to find it, then the worse that cassette gets because you're stretching the tape with rewinding and stopping and rewinding and stopping. Did you have a big cassette collection?
Yes. I still have it. I don't know what to do with it. It's in a massive box downstairs in my basement. I can't seem to throw them out. At some point, I'm convinced I'm going to transfer them to CD or something.
You are not.
No, probably
I'll tell you this right now. That is not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
So then along came the compact disc. I mean, this was a huge revolution.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me what you remember about when they were new.
I remember 1984 because at Iowa Public Radio and the Iowa City stations, we had the first CDs came in, I think, in maybe 83. God, it was great. It was great to just get rid of albums. You know, albums get dusty and the covers wear out and they skip. And if you're on the air, you have to stand there or sit there and make sure they don't skip.
Right. You can't walk out of the room because then if it starts skipping, there's just that awful sound on the air.
Yeah.
They were hard to cue up, too, if I remember correctly, because you had to put down the needle, but then you had to listen and get it to just the right point, and you had to go back far enough so that it didn't as you were starting it.
Which actually wears out the very first few seconds of the track. So, okay, fine. I mean, I do love albums, actually, and they made a huge comeback, largely because of the album art. I just, you know, lots of room to print stuff, interesting things, and they're coming back because the sound really can be quite good. But yeah, CDs were a huge deal.
Just completely revolutionary.
Absolutely, yeah.
And when CDs came out, I mean, you had seen all these different formats come and go. Did it feel like at last we've done it, this is the format that will last?
Absolutely. And that's, guess what? It's not lasting.
We also thought they were going to last forever. We didn't think CDs would wear out when we first got them.
No, a lot of people thought they would only last a few years. But actually, they actually hold up very well. I've never had one wear out before.
Really? A lot of people have.
Really?
Yeah.
No,
especially
mine are
people
fine.
Who let them slide around on the floor of the car.
You can't scratch them. You can't scratch them, of course, or leave them in the hot sun or something.
So did you, when CDs came out, did you feel like you needed to replace all of the records that you had in your personal collection?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you had to go back and buy your favorite albums again on CD.
Yes, yes. And there were record stores in downtown Iowa City where you could walk in and buy CDs, buy box sets. I loved, sort of obsessed with box sets, the complete work of an artist, you know, and 27 CDs for $149.95. Had to have a bunch of those, too.
So tell me a little about your CD collection.
Oh, it's, I have a collection of mostly obscure hits, things that are, there's a series called CDs with 45s that are hard to find. They're transfers from 45s. It's a series. I've got all of those because you can't find the 45s. But they sound great on CD. So I have a lot of that kind of stuff.
How big would you say your collection is?
It doesn't compare to my book collection. You know, I got probably 1,000 CDs or something.
All right. And again, I mean, you thought that was it. Those were going to last forever. So how do you feel right now while people are saying CDs are going the way of the 8-track?
Well, I think it's very sad because I like to have something printed, physical, in my hand when I'm listening to music. I mean, Pandora, okay, that's great. But there's no liner notes on Pandora. You can't read about the tracks and who wrote the songs and where they were recorded and what date they were recorded and look at some photographs. I don't get that. What's going to happen when we can't do that anymore? So what's going to happen when we can't do that anymore? I'm very concerned about that. So I hope CDs last, and I hope car manufacturers don't stop putting them in dashboards. That would be a tragedy.
So records have made a comeback. Vinyl has made a comeback. Does that make you happy that people are spending time listening to records that way now?
I think it's fantastic. I've decided not to go that route. I just can't see at my age buying albums again and finding turntables and whatnot. But I think it's great that young people are excited. Analog does have a very warm sound to it. And the bass is actually better than digital in a lot of respects.
Well, and listening to a record is a different kind of experience because you have to get physically involved.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And that's why I'm going to miss I miss not being able to do that. Or if, you know, just sitting listening to Pandora or something, there's no involvement. You can't hold that old 78 in your hand. Try not to drop it. And the labels are so beautiful. The old Capitol Record labels and Columbia Records, and just fun to stare at those things.
So do you have a favorite CD box set, something that you were able to get that still you're like, wow, I'm just so excited that this came out and fell into my hands?
Well, I bought Les Paul and Mary Ford. They actually came out. How High the Moon is on a CD, and I don't have to worry about wearing it out. And I can read about their lives. And these CD box sets came with beautiful booklets, very well illustrated. Like a little paperback book, except nicer.
Or a mini album.
Yeah.
Well, Dennis Reese, I hope CD players are always in your cars.
They better be, or I'm not going to just keep driving my old car forever.
Thanks a lot, Dennis.
Thank you.
Iowa Public Radio's Dennis Reese. He's seen it all. Coming up in just a moment, we'll continue our conversation about the end of CDs and the future of the music industry. I'll talk with Nate Neiswanger, owner of ZZZ Records in Des Moines, Luke Tweedy of Flat Black Studios in Lone Tree, and Tony Daner, host of Iowa Public Radio's Studio One Tracks. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Back in 1985, the band Dire Straits released their album Brothers in Arms. It became the first album to sell more on CD than on vinyl.
With the Sultans, with the Sultans of Swing.
That album really revolutionized the music industry. 33 years ago, compact discs became the format. Now digital downloads have exceeded CD sales. Best Buy isn't going to sell them anymore. Other retailers are right behind them. And this hour, we're saying goodbye, at least partially, to the CD. We're also talking about the future of music, and we want to hear from you. What was the very first CD you ever bought? You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or join the conversation, 866-780-9100. And joining me now is Nick Neiswanger. He's owner of ZZZ Records in Des Moines. Hello, Nick.
Hi, Charity. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for being here. So I want to know, I mean, how do people buy music in a record store in 2018? What do you mostly sell?
Well, it's definitely changed. I've had my store for about 18 years now. And when I first started out, I was very vinyl heavy. That was kind of an unusual decision at the time. Over the years, we did actually add more CDs. We got to the point where I'd say about 2007, 2008, we were half and half, about half records, half CDs. Now it's actually gone back the other way. And as you mentioned earlier, vinyl is back in. CDs are kind of on the way out. And I'll be honest, CDs are probably less than 10% of our sales now.
Wow. And so when you're selling vinyl, are you selling new vinyl? Are you selling vintage vinyl?
It's a mix. It's definitely a mix. It's interesting because we still do very well with used vinyl, and it can be anything from old Elvis records from the 50s and 60s all the way up to kind of your classic rock from the 70s and 80s. But we do sell a fair amount of new vinyl as well.
And are you able to sell enough locally or to be successful, mm-hmm. or do you also sell online?
I do very little online, and that's done on purpose because I've been to some stores before where they sell all their good stuff online and there's nothing to see in their store. So we try and put the good stuff out in our store instead of selling it to people who might be collecting it, you know, around the country or overseas.
And so when people started drifting back to vinyl, mm-hmm. what do you think was driving that?
Well, I think a couple there's a bunch of reasons, but I mentioned it was about 2007 where CD sales were still very strong. I feel like the recession was actually part of it because people did have less discretionary income. It's unfortunate, but a lot of the major labels, Sony, Universal, Epic Records, those companies, they were selling CDs still at that time for $15.99, $16.99, sometimes closer to $20. And that's quite an investment, especially if you're not sure that you actually like that band. So I think the price was part of it. You know, you can go into a store and find a used record a lot of times for $3, $4, $5.
Now, of course, you can also listen to that music on YouTube or download that music or stream it somewhere. So obviously it's not vinyl that's replacing CDs, although that's what you're selling.
Well, yeah, you're right. And there are certainly other reasons. High-speed internet is a big reason. In the early 2000s, we had things like Napster, and people were starting to use MP3s, but most people still had very, very slow internet connections. So you were still kind of limited on what you could do. As people started getting higher-speed internet, that made things a lot easier. So now not only could you download things for free, but you could download hundreds or thousands of songs at a time.
So you must talk to other people who have record stores. Record stores are a lot harder to find than they used to be. I mean, what does the future look like from the vantage point of a record store?
Most of the record stores that still seem to be alive, at least in the Midwest, are, you know, vinyl heavy or at least fairly strong in vinyl. Here in Des Moines, we had a number of stores that only sold UCDs. That was their specialty. And I believe they all went out of business about 2008, 2009, they were all gone within a few years.
Wow. So let's go back in time. We want to hear from a lot of people this hour talking about the first album they ever bought on CD. Do you remember what the first album was that you bought on CD?
Well, it's funny because now I grew up in a slightly different time. I grew up in the 80s. So the first album I ever got, which was a gift, was actually a cassette tape. So that would have been Huey Lewis and the News Sports, which had a bunch of hits on it, and tapes, especially for people my age. I was about 10 at that time. That was the dominant format. That's usually how we bought our music. So by the time CDs started getting big, they were still fairly expensive, and the equipment was expensive. To buy a brand new CD player was quite an investment. So when you're a student, usually you don't have those kinds of funds. So I didn't buy my first CD until probably the early 90s. And yeah, I do remember it was a used REM CD that I bought.
Nice. So you started with used CDs.
I did, yes. Yes. it had been established long enough that they were actually store selling used ones already.
Nice. Well, I think we need to hear a little bit of Huey Lewis and the News here, the heart of rock and roll.
Where else can you do a half a million things all at a quarter to three? Thank you.
That rockets me straight back to junior high. Nate Neiswanger, owner of ZZZ Records in Des Moines. You're going to stay with us, but I want to bring a few other people into this conversation. Next up, Luke Tweedy is here. He is the owner and head engineer of Flatback Studios and co-owner of Long Play Records. Also used to work in a record store in Iowa City. Hi, Luke.
How's it going, Charity?
Very good. So take us back in time. What was the first CD you ever bought?
The first album I got, people that know me will definitely get a kick out of this, is I begged my mom for a Michael Jackson album. And my mom was pretty thrifty, so she came back with a Jackson 5 Greatest Hits tape. And I listened to that tape.
It's not the same.
No, it's not. It's pretty far. Rockin' Robin and Ben and all those old Jackson 5 songs. But that would have been the first thing. When it came to CDs, it was like in junior high when I started to buy CDs, and it was the late 80s, and I was trying to decide who I was, trying to figure out who I was. So there was everything from like Metallica and Slayer to the other end of things like Run DMC, stuff like that.
So let's talk about when CD technology first came on the market, because we mentioned 1985 when an album first sold more in CD than it did on vinyl. CD technology also, it was out of reach for a lot of people for a little while, not just CD players. That kind of grew quickly, but the ability to burn a CD,
sure,
that was a really special opportunity for a lot of musicians. And when did you first start getting into that kind of equipment?
So in Iowa City, there used to be an audio store called Hawkeye Audio. And Hawkeye Audio in the late 90s got the first consumer grade CD burner made by a company called Marantz. And I remember very specifically the idea of if we could get a CD burner, a way to put music onto that CD, then somehow you can establish yourself as an artist. The CD burner was $799 at that time in 1990s money. And blank CDs were $7.99 a piece. The person that I did this with was William Elliott Whitmore, who I'm sure a lot of your listeners know his stuff. We would take his 4-track and one at a time, one song at a time, in real time, burn CDs. So to make an album would take an hour. We'd buy them for $7.99, take an hour doing that, photocopy all the inserts and whatnot, and then go to the show and sell it for $10.
So you're not just selling it at a loss, but a huge loss considering
loss.
The amount of time you were investing in it.
But it made it legitimized him as an artist on some level. And the idea of the studio was kind of born from that. Because for somebody to... Like nowadays, to put something on SoundCloud or Bandcamp, there's probably a million songs are added to those sites every single day. But to have a physical format meant something. It elevated it and legitimized it in some way.
So when you think about the CD, I mean, you were a former manager at the Record Collector in Iowa City, and the way you worked your way into that job was just being a very regular customer, right?
I was probably in that store every single day after I moved to Iowa City and would spend a lot of time in that store. And it became apparent to Kirk, the former owner of Record Collector, that I had as deep a knowledge as anybody in the staff, and I would be a good asset in the staff. At that time, even in the 90s, I was had switched over to vinyl.
Really?
And had moved away from CDs.
An earlier adopter of retro.
Sure. I mean, I just liked the format of vinyl more. It was larger. The liner notes were very important to me. It was a way that I could discover other bands. So, you know, if I'm listening to whatever the band of the day was and I see, oh, this bass player, he also played in this and this and this. And that was recorded in this studio. And that studio worked with this person, this person, this person. It really helped me discover stuff that there would be no other way to discover without that insight.
Although I remember buying a lot of CDs that had basically books jammed in the front cover
sure,
of the jewel
sure,
case. So
sure,
they
sure.
carry a lot of information as well.
Sure. I guess I mean the physical format,
yeah,
over the MP3, the streaming, Pandoras and SoundClouds and whatnot.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about why the CD was so revolutionary. And I'll bring somebody else into the conversation as well. Tony Daner is with us from Iowa Public Radio Studio One Tracks. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Charity. Hey, Luke.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
Nate's still with us as well.
Hey, Nate.
Hi there.
And so, Tony, let's talk about why the CD was so incredibly revolutionary. I mean, it carried so much information in such a compact format, compact disc, of course, but also the fact that you could listen to whichever song on the disc you wanted. We were talking earlier with Dennis Reese about rewinding for that favorite song, rewinding over and over, and some of us got so good at it, you knew exactly how long it would take. You just internalized that count, and then you could get to the beginning of your song as you destroyed your cassette by doing it over and over. I mean, the compact disc was pretty incredible,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It was like magic at first. You know, like some of the, like we've already heard, I also started with cassettes. My first cassette was probably Def Leppard, Hysteria, or something. And so
we're all revealing incredibly good musical taste
today.
We are,
yeah, yeah. So I got into CDs around freshman year in high school or so, maybe a little earlier. And the first time I heard it is like, you don't have to flip it over, and there's no whirring sound in the background. And you don't have to worry about your machine eating the CD player, or have to have a pencil handy in case you need to do some emergency surgery on your CD, you know? And you can see the countdown right there. You know exactly when the next song's going to start. It was really freeing in a lot of ways.
Well, and I know a lot of people, Luke's probably one of them, that really missed the warmth of vinyl, but over a cassette, I mean, the CD sound quality was incredible.
Yes, that's a lot of us who adopted CDs were not transitioning from vinyl. We were transitioning from cassette. That's absolutely correct. And there's no nostalgic reason or any other reason to go back to cassettes now. They're very cheap to produce, and you can throw them against a wall and they'll probably be fine. But other than that, nobody's going back to cassettes like, hey, this would be really cool if we did this, you know.
There's also an argument about the cassette versus the LP and what sounds better. But I think anybody would tell you that a cheap CD player is going to sound better than a cheap record player. To have a record player sound fantastic cost a lot of money. And CDs were a good cheap alternative.
Well, and of course, they also were really portable.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Although I do remember trying to run with a Discman. That seemed like a good idea, but that was pretty hard to do without it skipping. So do you, when in the Iowa Public Radio record library, of course, you have a huge CD collection. Do you also have a vinyl collection still? I know that when I first started in radio, there was a huge vinyl collection, but that was transitioning out.
We do have some vinyl left. We don't get sent more vinyl anymore. And Bob Dorr still plays vinyl on Backtracks. He's doing a live show this Saturday. I'm sure he'll be getting into the vinyl in our record library. But yeah, we still get thousands of CDs a year. We do have some vinyl. We had to a few years ago when we remodeled, the university had been on our case for years because the room was not rated for the amount of weight that we had in there.
Yeah, because vinyl is heavy.
Yeah, so we, if I remember correctly, we sold off about 1.3 tons of CD and vinyl that we just knew we weren't going to use anymore because I love amazing people with that number when I give tours of the studio. But, you know, our record library, it's not a museum. It's a functional record library. This is for stuff we're actually going to use on the air. So we did have to make some tough decisions there, and we had fun going through and saying, well, I have fond memories of this, but it's time for this to find a new home.
All right, so the CDs in the record library, how are they holding up?
Just fine, yeah. Yeah, and nothing really to report there.
And when people give you music now, send you music, are you still receiving a lot of CDs in the mail?
Yes, we are. Mark Simmet's desk is just buried in CDs at pretty much all times. We do get more downloads than we used to. I probably download a dozen to a couple dozen albums worth of music a month. Most of that is from Iowa bands. because that's just the easiest way to get it to us. And if you're listening right now, studio1@iowapublicradio.org, drop us a line if you want to send us your music. Interestingly enough, some of the if we do get downloads from other labels, it's usually the bigger labels up to and including like Columbia Records, you know, and sometimes we have to ask them. It's like, hey, will you please send us a download of the new Bob Dylan album? Oh, I guess. Here you go. You know, so
when you receive a download, do you receive WAV files or MP3s?
It is usually MP3 files, the higher resolution MP3s.
Which still are not at the level of CDs.
That's correct. And sometimes we actually, like if somebody gives us a download code for Bandcamp, you have an option to download FLAC files. And
sure.
I always go for that when that's an option. But most of the time, yeah, it's MP3s. Uncompressed WAV files are ideal, though.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Nate Neiswanger is here, owner of ZZZ Records in Des Moines. Luke Tweedy, owner and head engineer of Flat Black Studio and co-owner of Long Play Records. Tony Daner is here as well, IPR's Studio One Tracks. Go out with a little Jackson 5 here. We'll be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, the evolution of recorded music. We're saying goodbye, maybe a little prematurely, but saying a long goodbye to CDs now that digital downloads have far exceeded them in sales. We'd love to hear from you this hour. We're reminiscing a little bit. We'd love to hear about the very first album you ever bought on a CD. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. And with me, Nate Neiswanger, owner of ZZZ Records in Des Moines, Luke Tweedy, owner and head engineer of Flat Black Studio and Lone Tree and co-owner of Long Play Records. Tony Daner is here from IPR Studio One. And just before the break, we were talking about sound quality. And Luke, I mean, that's a big deal. I talked about how some people didn't like CDs because they felt like the quality wasn't as warm. But when we talk about CDs versus MP3 files, I mean, that's a really big quality difference, isn't it?
It is a big quality difference. And my personal point of view is shame on Apple for confining us to early 2000s technology. I feel like we're at a point now where the iPod and iPhone should be able to play above CD quality. Storage is so incredibly cheap. I mean, 64 gigs on a basic iPhone these days. And what we do in the studio is several fold over CD quality. So when something leaves the studio and it sounds a certain way, and then I hear it on YouTube or SoundCloud or a streaming service like Spotify, it's a real bummer that the end listener is subjected to bad quality.
Well, we got an email along these lines. This is from Keith. He says, I've owned a recording studio since 1973. My concern now is how people listen to music, not the format the music is presented on. But I have three stereos in my house, two large speakers, a tube preamp, and plenty of wattage. Sit back and 10 feet and feel the music fill the room. Nobody listens that way anymore. Nobody has stereos in their house. Most listening now occurs in headphones, earbuds, or in the car. I mean, that's really true. That has totally changed.
That is true. Night before last, I sat down with Dana Telsrow to listen to his new album on vinyl, and we sat in silence in my living room and just listened to both sides, side A and side B, of a vinyl record, and it was fantastic. And that is a real shame. I don't feel like, people ingest music the same way.
Well, I wonder if that explains a little bit of a comeback maybe for the live music scene, because that's really the only time you get engulfed by the sound.
It's the only way most people get engulfed right by the sound. Some of us still listen to records.
Right. Well, I realize that I have an unusual collection of individuals here. But, I mean, Nate, do you have something you'd like to say about that, about how people listen to the music that you're selling?
I remember hearing a report maybe about 10 years ago where they were talking about in Asia, smartphones were getting big over there, and that's how teenagers and young adults were using that to get all their new music. You know, that's the way they listen to things. And I thought, that's ridiculous. Why, you know, why would you want to hear it over a tinny phone? And here we are in 2018, and that's what everybody's doing.
We have this email from Doug. He said, I'm a contemporary of Dennis Rees and have had a similar experience with music formats. I regret the transition to all digital and have high hopes for vinyl because I'm an artist and album cover art was always a big part of the experience for me. And let's talk a little bit about the resurgence of vinyl because, again, it's not going to overtake digital downloads. But Luke, what does that mean for an artist to put vinyl out today?
So the label I co-own with Will Whitmore, Longplay, we've never done any CDs. We're all vinyl with download code, and it's full res downloads at CD quality. To me, since so many people, especially young people, when I worked in a record store, the bulk of people that would buy stuff were 18 to 24. And people that are ages 18 to 24 now don't purchase music at all. They might subscribe to a streaming service and pay a little bit, but an artist through a streaming service gets a fraction. You know, they could have their song played thousands and thousands of times in a month and not get $20. Where if they sell a record, that's one record sold at the merch table. And for as many people as are enjoying their music, it's a real shame that nobody does buy the albums. You know, some people do. Some of us still do. But for people that say they support independent art, independent music, they definitely should be buying something from the artist.
Speaking of artists, I want to get an artist's perspective here. Anna Gebhardt is on the phone with us of Anna Libera. And Anna, hello.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And actually, let's listen to a little bit of one of your tracks to introduce people to you. This is Imprints off your latest album. Libera. And Anna, you chose to put out a vinyl album and a digital download card with your latest album. Why did you make that decision?
It's funny to hear that song over the phone. That's the worst quality.
Right. Not the best way to listen to a song.
For me, it has a lot of people on the shows talked about this. It's almost like a design thing. Like, of course, I like listening to the warmer tone of vinyl, but I guess, like, having grown up listening to tapes and CDs and then found my way to vinyl, like retro style, I like the vinyl record as sort of a physical object, and it feels to me like it lasts longer. Of course, Dennis was saying that his CDs don't have a problem lasting, but I haven't found that to be the case. Like, they just don't seem like as quality to me, and like as far as like a lasting object. So I put a lot of work into my records, and then it makes me feel better. Maybe it's a sense of like a sort of false confidence, but it makes me feel like they're going to be around a little bit longer.
Now, as an independent musician, a lot of people listen to you through streaming services. How does that work for you as an artist to have your music available on something like Spotify?
Yes, I'm an independent artist, and so you can go through like a company. I put my music online using a thing called TuneCore, and so you just pay to put your music onto like Spotify and iTunes, and then they put money that you get from those into like a little account that you can then move into your bank. But my you know, you have to pay on this one every year to keep an album online, so it ends up just like any money I get from streaming or something like that usually just goes into keeping the albums online.
So you're either basically giving it away or actually paying to have your music available.
Yeah. And I'm even like mildly sort of like successful, air quotes, you know, locally. So, I mean, I'm sure people that don't get as many streams locally, maybe like they definitely are going into sort of a deficit to have their music on like Spotify or something. Of course, there's Bandcamp, but you don't have to pay to put your music on there.
But obviously, it can be a really big hill to climb to get your music out there and actually have people pay to listen to it.
Yeah.
So before we let you go, think back, what was the first album you bought on CD?
Yeah, like I would listen to tapes. I had my Pocahontas tape and my Enya tape and my Madonna tapes. But the first CD, my mom gave me money to go to Alco. I don't know if any of y'all have been to Alco before. It's like the Shopko of rural areas.
Oh, yeah.
So she let me take some money and choose a CD to buy, and I wanted the song Millennium by Robbie Williams. And so I chose the CD that said Millennium on it. And when we got in the car and put it on, I was incredibly disappointed because it turned out it was Backstreet Boys' album, Millennium.
Oh.
But then I became a huge fan of the Backstreet Boys.
There you go.
You almost had to be at that point, right?
Well, and I know every word on that album.
Anna, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Anna Gebhardt of Anna Libera, Des Moines-based music project. We have a lot of people on the phone who want to be part of this conversation, so let's get to the phone. Suzanne is on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Suzanne.
Oh, hi, yes. It's just a small thought, but what really bothers me about this new technology, that it used to be, and I don't call all the records, I was a record person, and it's the same thing is true with CDs, that there was a conception and clarity of a CD or a record, and so the artist very carefully put one against the other to make, you know, more like a symphony. So there were different movements, and there was a slow song and a fast song, and they had a relationship to one another. And I feel like in this new era, it's just songs. That's all it is. And so we've lost the artistry of that larger arc.
Interesting. Suzanne, thanks a lot for your call. So what do you think, Luke? I mean, when artists put together an album, they're still putting together an album.
That's absolutely true. I think that's a really great point because a lot of people do just think of what is the next song, what is the next song. They don't think about key and tempo and all those mm-hmm. things to make the greater package of the LP or CD, for that matter, the album itself. So, I think that's a great point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tony, when you get a new digital download from an artist, do you try to listen to the album so you get that arc as a music professional yourself? Or
yeah. You know, I do the best I can. That's for sure. And I will say also, that was one thing from when CD players were introduced. The shuffle feature is one thing I never got into. You know, it's like, hey, you can just randomly put the album in any order you want. But I never understood why you would want to do that for the exact reasons that the caller just mentioned.
Interesting. All right. Next up, we've got Gerald on the line in Ottumwa. Hi, Gerald.
Hi. Am not, sorry, my take on CDs is not a reminiscent take. I'm buying more CDs than I used to, possibly ever before. I don't know. I went to college in the 90s. When I got my first CD player, it was an old model. The CD mounted vertically, and it was really peculiar that it could play scratched CDs a lot of the time, even if it was kind of messy sounding, whereas most players will just reject it and refuse to play it.
Well, and Gerald, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but you're buying CDs because you're really interested in supporting independent artists, making sure that you're making that investment?
Yeah, I had actually stopped buying CDs for a long time, but lately I'm getting more interested in individual artists, and they will often go the extra mile to make their packaging for their CD something special.
Yeah. Well, Gerald, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And, I mean, obviously artists are still selling CDs often at their shows. I mean, Luke, that's been a source of income for artists for a long time. Do artists have to push a lot of other kinds of merchandise to try to make a little money at their shows?
Some of the most interesting things I hear coming from artists that come through the studio is a lot of people aren't making CDs anymore. They've given up on that, or it's too much overhead to order like a minimum order of 300 CDs. So there's a lot of like selling the T-shirt with a download code of the album. If you get the T-shirt, you just get the download code. If you buy the LP, you get the download code. A pint glass, shot glass with the download code. Because people are so used to consuming the music for free now that artists have to find a different way to get them to buy the album. So essentially.
So let's take a moment and look into the future. Nate, what does the future look like from the perspective of a record store owner?
Well, the one thing I'd say to Gerald is that the CD market is not completely dead. You know, they do still sell, at least the very commercial artists. There are still a lot of CD sales going on out there. But, you know, other stores are going to follow suit. You mentioned Target and Best Buy, cutting back on those and eventually getting rid of them. Other stores are going to do that too, but you still have online sites. You still have Amazon. You still have smaller stores that will still sell CDs.
All right, so it's not going completely away. And I mean, Tony, it sounds like your future's pretty firmly in CDs for a while. You're still burning CDs of all the digital downloads you get, right?
That is correct. And, because we take them with us to Studio One Underground every month at the Des Moines Social Club. We're still doing live shows. We still got to have them somewhere. You know, we can't just have a hard drive that we do all of our shows off of. Got to have a library. Got to be able to look through them all. Yep.
All right. Well, Tony Daner, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Tony Daner of Iowa Public Radio Studio One Track. Nate Neiswanger, owner of ZZZ Records in Des Moines. Thanks a lot, Nate.
Thank you.
And Luke Tweedy, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Charity.
Luke Tweedy, owner and head engineer of Flat Black Studio in Lone Tree and co-owner of Long Play Records. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I see me. Do you think you'll be?